How's your day going today? I can guarantee you it's better than Limo Larry Scott's day. It began with John Canzano publishing a piece in Oregon Live disclosing the exorbitance that Sir Larry is currently spending in Vegas right now. An average nightly stay at his private room in the Aria Resort of $7,500. But don't worry, it's not like he's the commissioner of a conference whose athletic directors are constantly chiding him for disclosures of the conference internal finances and to compare it to its peer Power 5 conferences. It's not like that's happening at all. The man who wrote that story, John Canzano, the host of this program Monday through Friday on the BFT and the BFT radio network, he joins us live from Vegas right now. JC, Limo Larry, he's at it again, isn't he?
Well, we all suspected he might stay somewhere nice, but I had no idea that it would include a private butler and a marble soaking tub and a private elevator and a pool that is exclusive to that suite. And we're talking about 3,370 square feet of goodness. And look, it would cost you and I $7,500 a night. It's negotiated as part of the deal that the Pac-12 has with the hotels here. I'm sure they're not paying that, but man, is that a bad look.
Well, when you heard about this for the first time, what was your reaction? You had to have been incredulous.
Well, I couldn't believe it, but I knew he would stay somewhere nice. I mean, it's just he's a first cabin guy. That's the way he is. He comes from the corporate world, and people who live in that corporate world probably don't see this as that big a deal. But the optics of it, when you've got, you know, 10 of your 12 member institutions or public institutions, you've got everybody who's just really hurting on the financial front. If I'm Larry Scott, given what is out there publicly, even if that room is given to me free, I'm turning to athletic directors in the conference and I'm saying, hey, you know, one of you guys should take that room. You know, you have to do a collegial and collaborative move there if you're Larry Scott, but he did not.
John Canzano joining us on the BFT. JC, what that tells me is either A, he is simply willfully ignorant of the optics of things like this, or B, he understands the optics and he just doesn't care. And I'm inclined to think B, which means he's basically giving a middle finger to all of his detractors, which includes his own athletic directors. I mean, you've been reporting it the whole way. His own ADs are tired of his leadership when it comes to financial expenditures.
It's just not going to fly because they're holding a meeting on Saturday morning at the Aria. And it'll be really interesting because the ADs are staying at their respective school hotels. And look, those are nice places. The Bellagio's a nice place. The Venetian's nice. MGM Grand is nice. You can get a nice suite anywhere. But the room rate on those rooms is going to be closer to $200 or $300 a night, not $7,500. And it's just the optics of them now knowing this is how Champagne Larry's going to live for the week. And it's just not in the spirit of, hey, let's run lean, let's be collaborative. And you're right. I think he is sort of just saying, look, I don't care. You know, it's a two-bedroom suite. I know that he's staying there with his wife and his son. You know, but it's going to be a nice week for him in Las Vegas.
Have you made eye contact with him yet?
No. Actually, you know, I saw him at the women's game. So just in passing at the women's game. He's not a confrontational person. He's not the kind of person, I've covered people where if you write critically of them, they're going to come up and want to have a discussion. And I almost do better in that format because I'm not writing something just shooting from the hip. I'm, you know, my opinions are based on, you know, information and background. And I just feel like he's not a confrontational person. He's only worried about managing his bosses. And he sort of dismissed the naysayers as, well, everyone has a right to their opinion. That's what comes with the job when you're making $4.8 million.
Would you say that he's a nice guy?
I don't know that we know him. I just know that he is big on talking points. He has a hard time connecting with rank-and-file Pac-12 fans. I thought it was really interesting at the women's game. He walked into the building. I watched him at MGM Grand Arena. He walked in. You have a crowd of 5,000 college fans who have come to see two women's team in your conference play. It's a huge success moment. If I'm the commissioner of the conference, I'm working the crowd a little bit. I'm talking to fans. I'm thanking people for bringing their families here. Instead, he walks in. He goes straight to Michael Schill, the Oregon president, spends about 10 minutes with him, says hi to Rob Mullins, and then leaves and disappears until he reemerges at halftime to do the ESPN interview, and then after the game to give the trophy presentation, and then presumably back to the Sky Suite after that.
Yeah, see, and he's very visibly uncomfortable in media situations and in people situations. He has no people skills, which is ironic given the level of access that he can get with his salary to different functions and what have you. But whether it's the video that you published from March 2017 when he was announcing his own contract extension, that's cringeworthy. His appearances on this radio show, those have all been cringeworthy. And his interview over the weekend with ESPN2 during the women's game, that was cringeworthy as well. He has probably the least appealing personality to try to dig out of his own grave of a PR nightmare.
And, you know, it's funny because I've always believed that if you're in that situation, look, he's an attorney. He's a Harvard-educated attorney and a tennis player. He's not a guy that, you know, is great working the room. He's just a smart guy who has successfully negotiated some contracts in his career. So here's the bottom line, though. If you're self-aware enough to know that, hey, I don't do well in those situations. I've got strengths, but being in front of the camera and being in front of the media is not one of them. You would think that he would do less of that, or he'd work really hard to get better at it. And I don't see either one of those things.
What's next here? Have you gotten any reaction from ADs to your piece from early this morning?
Yeah, not only ADs, but I heard from an athletic director in the WCC. They're also in Vegas for their conference tournament. And one of the ADs at a WCC school reached out to me and said, hey, by the way, our commissioner is staying over at the Orleans Hotel. Gloria Navarez, who is the WCC commissioner, at the Orleans Hotel, $100 a night. That's what the WCC commissioner is paying for the hotel room.
Wow, that's crazy. That's you know
but
what that
the
is?
Saturday
that's
meeting,
sane.
That Saturday meeting's interesting because this is the first time in 5 years that Larry has met with his ADs and the presidents together. Mm. This is a shift. So I do believe the presidents are saying, let's get the ADs more involved, and that's what Saturday is about. I don't think Larry wants to do it, but I think it's being forced on him.
Do you think some ADs are, obviously there's a good amount that have expressed their frustration with him, whether on or off the record, but do you think there's some that are a little bit careful of expressing their displeasure? And does that Saturday meeting for those athletic directors, is there safety in a crowd for them to come forth and express their displeasure with his leadership? Or is it the other way? With the presidents and chancellors there, no ADs will want to voice against Larry Scott. What do you think?
The presidents and chancellors are empowering the ADs right now. So I think if you're an athletic director, you feel that you're in a position of strength going into Saturday. I don't know that they're going to come away with any major victories on Saturday, but I think it's definitely a shift behind the scenes where the athletic directors who understand the budgets and understand the restrictions. I mean, these are the people who are spending the money. Jen Cohen at Washington, she's charged with a budget. She's relying on the Pac-12. This is awesome that they're putting her in the room, and you know they're putting the athletic directors at Oregon and Oregon State in the room and letting them have a voice in this because, you know, ultimately it's their budget. And I think that's been a longstanding frustration, but I still think Larry will reluctantly deal with them because there's no job security in letting 12 more voices in the room for Larry Scott. He's managed the presidents and chancellors masterfully to this point.
Right before the show went on the air, the news broke that the ACC network has a distribution deal with DirecTV, and the ACC network hasn't even launched yet.
Yep. Well, they went out and got a deal done before they launched. That was a smart thing for them to do. Pac-12 is in trouble. I think only 12 of the 70 hotels that are on the strip have the ability to get the Pac-12 network.
So, got to go to the game.
And you can't get it in the bars.
Oh,
see, that's a big problem. You can't – a big problem. Nobody talks about this. But even in Oregon and Washington, you go into a sports bar, it's a challenge. If they've got DirecTV, you're not getting the Pac-12 network.
Right, right. That happens all the time. Trust me, I've tried many a time.
In the sports books, yeah. The casinos, they have DirecTV. And so you ask for the Pac-12 network, and they just shrug at you.
Well, it doesn't seem to me this conversation is going to go away anytime soon. But, John, if we direct our concerns to the court, what kind of questions do you have in the upcoming Pac-12 tournament for the Oregon State Beavers? They did get that first round bye, so they won't have to play until Thursday. Trace Tinkle will be on the BFT later this afternoon as well. What kind of questions do you have for Wayne Tinkle's program as he gets them ready to try to make a run?
They're on unprecedented turf here, right? In recent history there, they have not been a top four seed in this tournament. They were picked to be 10th. They end up 4th. I think that's the best finish by a 10th place prediction. You know, a team that was predicted by the media to finish 10th, that's the best place, that the best turnaround or overachievement that we've seen. But the question is this: are you real? Are you ready to take advantage of, you know, they set themselves up nicely, giving themselves the bye. They will play the winner of the Cal-Colorado game. I'm assuming it's going to be Colorado because Cal's terrible. They get a very winnable game. They're rested. They've put in the work. But what we've seen all year from them is, you know, they play really well for a week, and then they lose close games for a week. So, you know, are they for real, and can they win a close game? Because there are going to be close games in this tournament. These teams are all so evenly matched.
Oregon has seemed to have answered that question the last four games. They have the potential to be real. Their first test is going to be with Ernie Kent and Washington State on Wednesday night. What's the big question that you have for Dana Altman's program?
They have to have low miles in that game, right? Because if you're going to win this thing, you're going to have to play four games in 4 days. And they get a bonus in being the sixth seed. Big difference between being sixth or seventh. If they were seventh, they'd have to play Stanford. Being sixth, they get Washington State. Next to Cal, that's the easiest game that this tournament has. So you get a very winnable game, and you get a chance to have low miles. They need low miles on their starters in that first game. So I expect to see Dana Altman play a whole bunch of guys. I think you'll get a bunch of players in double figures if everything goes well. And you have to avoid looking past Washington State while simultaneously looking past Washington State. So I think that's a big test there. They have a very... I like their path. Washington State, then they get Utah. I think that's a winnable game. So presumably you see Arizona State in the semifinal and Washington or Oregon State sitting on the other side of the bracket. And, you know, Oregon is in this.
I'm happy for you too, John, because like the rest of the Pac-12 fans, you've been subjected to watching some pretty average, mediocre basketball the last few months. But tonight you get to watch Gonzaga. That's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, and look, what a tournament that is, too, because it's just so interesting to see the teams that you know are in the tournament and are only playing for seeding purposes against a bunch of other hungry teams that are trying to get an automatic bid. Gonzaga, it feels like this is their year, and if Zach Collins had just stayed at Gonzaga, I think that they would be an absolute no-brainer to be a Final Four team. But everyone's afraid to pick them because we've been burned in the past. But this is a great team, and I just wonder if the competition that they've had to play in the last month of conference play is enough to test them for the tournament.
Okay, before we let you go, John, I know you got a lot to get to. I have to get your thoughts on a couple of these topics buzzing around the sports world. Russell Westbrook in the altercation with the Utah Jazz fan last night. Did you get to see some of this, and what is your opinion on that?
I'm just so tired of fans who are so close to the court either reaching out and touching the players or acting like, hey, I can say anything I want because I'm sitting here. And Westbrook's a hothead. I don't know that I'd be much different than him, though. I mean, I got to be honest. Like, I wouldn't appreciate that. And I've heard some horrible things said by fans. I saw a fan, you probably saw the video of Westbrook a few weeks ago. A young fan reached out and kind of tapped him on the hip, and he kind of turned around like, don't touch me. I've seen fans lean over the rail. Like, you know, I think he's an extreme example, but this is a reminder. Like, when you're at the zoo, you know, you have rules. When you're at the movie theater, you have rules. When you go, you know, any live performance, turn off your cell phones. I was at a comedy act the other night. They took the cell phones away so nobody could do video. There are rules to being a spectator that you kind of give up, you know, some of your liberties that you would have outside because you're at an event and you don't want to ruin it for everybody else. So I wish that people at basketball and football games and, you know, would adhere to the same kind of process that you do when you go to any other live performance. There are rules you have to follow if you have a ticket.
And another black eye in collegiate athletics. The FBI uncovered a massive bribery scheme today. Over 50 people were charged, including some college coaches, and JC, including a couple of coaches of some minor sports in the Pac-12 conference. A sailing coach at Stanford, a former women's soccer coach at USC, and Donna Heinel, the USC senior associate athletic director, was all part of this scam to collectively pay $25 million to help get parents and their children into prestigious institutions. Where have we come to when we're talking about trying to bribe institutions to let our kids go to school there?
Yeah, and it just gets crazier the more you read about it. Like, some of the parents didn't want their kids to know that they were bribing. They wanted them to feel like they got in on their own. And I think we're going to look back on this era of history and we're going to go, you know, they did what? That becomes, you know, sort of the cry every day when you get on social media. It's unbelievable. Like, you couldn't make this up. But at the same time, you combine people with wealth who have kids who they want to take care of. And does this surprise anybody that people in Hollywood and in sports are interested in trying to grease the palms of others to get their kids advanced? I mean, this is in part the American way.
That's good. John, it's good to talk to you. We'll follow you on Twitter at John Canzano BFT. Appreciate the time as always.
Thank you.
Oh, that's JC. Follow him on Twitter at John Canzano BFT and appreciate him giving me the opportunity to sit in for him today on the BFT. Peter Sampson will be in the chair tomorrow taking care of you noon to 3 p.m. We'll get reaction to that plus a big splash and punch it audio coming up on the Bald Fish Truth.